Blog Talk Radio.
The following broadcast is brought to you by the iGolf Sports Network. The Women of Golf Show is sponsored by the iGolf Sports Network and Golf Tips Magazine. iGolf Sports is a live stream broadcast and media production company providing quality programming designed to attract the golfing enthusiast. And Golf Tips, the game's most in-depth instruction magazine with insightful reviews on the latest equipment, tips from top teaching professionals, helping you improve your game from tee to green. Good morning. Welcome to the Women of Golf, the number one women's golf show around the world, with hosts Ted Odorico and Cindy Miller. Join them as they interview some of the best players from the Epson, LPGA, and Legends Tour, and so many others helping to elevate women's golf. So without further ado, here are your hosts, Ted and Cindy.
All right, good morning, everybody, and welcome to the Women of Golf. I'm Ted Odorico, and right alongside, of course, is none other than Legends Tour player and LPGA professional, Cindy Miller, and we are your hosts here on the Women of Golf. Good morning, Cindy.
Good morning, Ted. How are you doing today?
I am doing fantastic. Very excited. We've had some rain, so it's one of those rainy days yesterday and again today, so I'm kind of just taking it easy, getting caught up on some things. But other than that, I'm doing pretty good. We got a great show, everybody, this morning. We're going to be joined momentarily by our very special guest this morning from the LPGA's Epson Tour, Lindsay McCurdy. She'll be joining us a little bit here in just a moment. And then a little bit later, you and I are going to have a discussion. We're going to talk about mastering your golf practice routine. And this is actually another book that I have put together. It's not officially been released yet, but hopefully it'll be out shortly. But it's going to talk about some of the different types of practice and all some little goodies and nuggets in there. Hopefully it'll help you get on the right track. So we'll talk about that on the second half of the show. But first up, our special guest joining us this morning, as I said, is Lindsay McCurdy, and she is originally from Kyle, Texas. She played collegiate golf at Southern Methodist University, and her golfing professional has provided her a great opportunity to not only travel but meet new people. She also enjoys time spending with family and friends and going camping in her RV when she has the chance. If she wasn't a professional golfer, that she'd like to perhaps be a college golf coach, which I think would be very interesting. We'll talk to her about that and more. And she was actually on our show last year, April 4th, I believe, of 2023. So she's been a guest. So, Cindy, let's welcome back our special guest this morning, Lindsay McCurdy.
Good morning.
Good morning. How are you guys?
We're doing great. You are in Utah.
Yes, I am. Yep.
Are there lots of mountains where you are right here, right there, right now?
Yes, it's beautiful here. I love coming here.
That's awesome. That's awesome. Are you going to play a practice round today?
Yes, I think I'm just going to do 9 holes today. We are on our 4th week of our stretch of events here, and so you're starting to feel it after 4 weeks, so I think 9 holes would be good enough for me, and then I'm in the pro-am tomorrow.
So we really don't need to kill ourselves.
Exactly.
So, you know what, speaking of that, let's talk about that, because how many people, and I would be one of those when I first started playing, I would go out and kill myself, and you got to play, you got to practice, you got to do this, you got to do that, and I married a guy who was chill as can be, and he would do what you do, because he's been out there for so long, he's like, I'm only playing 9 holes, I'm like, what do you mean you're only playing 9 holes, what do you not care? And he's like, Cindy, I've been out here forever, and I know the course, and I don't need to do this. So tell us why you're chilling like a villain, and you know the course, and you're not going to kill yourself. So tell us your thoughts.
Well, I was the exact same way whenever I first started on tour. As you were saying, Cindy, that you were where I wanted to try to play like 18 holes every day and really grind. And I was like, yeah, I'm going to work hard and play well. And to do that, I'm going to have to like kill myself out here by trying to play all the time. And as the years have gone on, I've learned that that is definitely not the way to do it. I know that everyone's probably different, but I do think everyone probably understands the importance of quality over quantity after doing this for a little bit. Like I said, we're on our fourth week in a row, so I do keep that in mind whenever I'm, you know, practicing during the week, saying, okay, yes, I have this tournament this week, but I'm here, I'm going to be out here for the next 4 weeks, so I need to keep that in mind whenever I'm trying to schedule my day out with the idea of, okay, let's not be exhausted by the last week and then I don't play well because I'm exhausted. I mean, another thing that helps is that I've been out here for 4 years, so I have played this course. I want to say this is at least my third year back here, if not four, because we've been coming out here a few years. So I know the course. It's more about just being comfortable with where my game is while I'm on the course, but I know where to hit the shots too. So it's a little combination of just trying not to be exhausted by Sunday of the last tournament and just knowing the course as well. But there's definitely some importance to the balance of quality and quantity work out here.
Good girl. Ted?
I think very, very smart and very astute of you to, and I think you're right, Lindsay. I think when players first come out on tour, there's sort of an internal dialogue that goes on. I've got to be out here all the time. I've got to be grinding it. I've got to be really doing that. And they don't really settle into, at least for some players, certainly, again, as you pointed out, there's other players that can do that and that works well for them. But for a lot of players, I think they have to find their rhythm. So for you, when did that sort of happen? When did you find your rhythm and you kind of said to yourself, you know what? I know my game. I know what I'm capable of. And I know that I can do this and I can get away with that and not do this or that. When did that, how long were you on tour before you really sort of come to fruition with that? Was it maybe second year, third year, or just more recently?
It's hard for me to say, but I would say around my second or third year. You know, the more that I also traveled with players that had been out here a lot longer too, and kind of seeing what they do and them having success from that as well. I mean, I've traveled with girls that are now on the LPGA, and so it's like, okay, how did they get there? And I'm seeing them succeed by not just being out there for 8 hours a day. It's like, okay, they manage their time a little bit better and we're still able to play well and make it to the LPGA. So I'd say it took me a couple of years, but I think that's probably everyone. It's, you know, I have a couple of friends who we laugh now because, you know, we'll see someone that's younger and they're out there like grinding away and we're like, oh, rookies. I remember when I did that.
Yeah, that comes with maturity, Lindsay. I think that's so true. And everything in our life, you know, when you go to school and you first get there and, you know, when you're going from, what we'd classify as middle school into high school, your patterns change. Then you go from high school to collegiate, you know, that changes a little bit again. So you start to, you know, your first year at that new school, you're kind of getting your feet wet, trying to figure out everything out. So it's the same thing with, you know, your everyday life with your career and so forth. You obviously really enjoyed this career. You obviously decided at some point you played collegiate golf at Southern Methodist University. Tell us about a little bit about that experience. What was your takeaway from that experience that's helping you today?
Yeah, well, first of all, I did love college golf, but it is completely different than professional golf. So there is that to think about whenever I say, you know, when I was a rookie or when I see rookies now that are trying to manage their time. I mean, it is completely different than college golf, but I thoroughly enjoy both. I played at SMU, played all 4 years and had a great time. And I didn't really know if I was going to play professionally. It really wasn't until my senior year that I kind of saw myself wanting to take it to the next level. But when I was in school, I was, you know, I always, I mean, that's the dream when I was a kid, but the more I was playing, I was kind of just trying to get through school and figure out golf and see what I wanted to do with my life. And I feel like every year that I was at SMU, I kind of just got better and better and was a little more motivated and kind of saw that this is something that I wanted to take to the next level. And by the time I had graduated, just decided that I wanted to go to Q School.
I mentioned in the intro that if you weren't doing what you're doing now, that an alternative would be to actually maybe be a college golf coach. Is that something that you still would be interested in doing at some point, at a later point? And if so, what is it about that position that was appealing to you? Because obviously you had a golf coach. You got to see that person in action and that. What was it about that particular career that appealed to you?
I actually coached during the COVID year. I can't remember if we talked about that last year when I was on the show. But I did get to, like, dip my toes in the coaching world a little bit just when we didn't really have that much to play in. I had the North Texas coach is a friend of mine, and he reached out because he knew that we didn't have really anything to play in. And so he's like, well, you know, if you want to try to see if maybe coaching's the route you want to go, you can be my assistant. So I was an assistant at University of North Texas for a year, and I loved it. I will say, like, it is a lot of work, but it was a lot of fun, so it didn't really feel like work, if that makes sense. But it was a lot of fun. So I really did have a hard time stepping away from coaching back once we got a lot of our tournaments back, just because I really enjoyed the position. The team was awesome, and there's a lot of things that I really enjoyed about it. But after kind of sitting down and talking with my family, we kind of said, like, okay, I kind of need to see this playing thing through, and then I can always go back to coaching. But I think that was more how I kind of saw myself becoming a coach. I kind of always thought that I'd use my advertising degree whenever I got done. But I guess I've also didn't quite see myself playing this long. I didn't really know what the future held. So I feel like since I've been in the golf world this long, I'm kind of seeing myself more in the golf business in one way or another. And coaching is definitely an amazing way to do that.
Why did you like coaching?
I think a big part of it for me, like I said, was we did have a really great group. They all worked super hard on the golf course and the classroom, and they were very receptive whenever you wanted to help them. And so I feel like that really kind of made it easy, but there was a lot of work to it, like I said, as well. But I just felt like the whole time I was there, I was like, yeah, even if I had to be up super early or if we're having to do a lot of paperwork, like, it's not the most fun, but at the end of the day, I was like, this is, like, a really cool experience, and to be a part of golf and, like, team golf and college golf, which I love so much, it made it not feel like, oh, I have to go to work. It was like, oh, I get to go to work with the girls, and it was a lot of fun. There's still a little bit of travel. Like, I do enjoy traveling, but, you know, once I'm done playing myself, I feel like it would be nice to still kind of be in that, but maybe not be in it for 20 to 25 weeks a year. We're doing it more like 10 weeks.
Did they respect you more because you've been playing?
Yeah, I would probably say so. And I think that's why our head coach wanted to hire someone that had been playing, because even whenever he was hiring me, that's what he said. He's like, yeah, I want the girls to have someone that they can kind of resonate with and look up to, because a lot of these girls want to go play professionally. So I feel like it'd be a good fit. And I think they did, because a lot of them were asking about, you know, my path from SMU to the SM Tour and what it took and what they needed to do. So, they were great. I'm sure that a lot of college golf girls are like that, but I think we also got really lucky with our group of girls.
Good. Good.
So let me ask you, let me just ask you, Lindsay, sort of a follow-up. So obviously that's something that you would certainly be interested in gravitating back to when you feel that you exhausted your playing career. If you were in front of a group of young girls now, not necessarily collegiate level, but maybe a little bit younger, who were not involved in any way in golf, what would you say to convince them to consider the opportunities that are available? Because obviously there's scholarship opportunities that they could pursue that could get them into a good college, so on and so forth. What would that conversation be like for you if you were sitting in front of a group of girls that maybe had never played the game before? How would you convince them to at least open their eyes and get a better understanding about golf? Because there's obviously a lot of misconceptions. Difficult sport, we all know that, but there's a lot of benefits that can come from golf. What would be that conversation that you would have?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, I know that I've pretty much been in golf my whole life, so my life has kind of turned into taking that route of it's going to be in golf one way or another, but I feel really blessed to be able to say that because I feel like, you know, all my close friends are golfers and it's something that you can play forever. You really can't say that with a lot of things. A lot of business is done on the golf course. So, I mean, I feel like, you know, even if you just played growing up or you played in college but you didn't decide to play professionally, it can turn into something where you can use it as business. You can go out and play golf with, you know, a coworker, or you can go with a client. So I feel like golf can be a way to bring people and a way for people to enjoy the outdoors. And like I said, I know that it's just kind of become my life, but it's really cool to see when someone who's not played golf since they were 5 years old can still enjoy golf when they're an adult I played sports growing up, but now I can't be a gymnast when I'm 40 or, you know, so it's like, okay, I can go try golf and enjoy it. And, I feel like it's just kind of, it's a pretty special sport in that way. It can be a part of your life forever, which is really cool.
Yeah, and it's very interesting, too, if you look at most major league sports players of whether it be baseball, football, basketball, what have you, many of them, when they get to their what we call their retirement, which for some can be very early because they're very, you know, physical sports, all seem to gravitate to golf. So there's something said in that, you know, why is it they're all playing golf? And that's because they can still be competitive and they can still do it well into their golden years if they choose to, and obviously if your health stays intact. But yeah, you're exactly right. It's something you play for a long time. I want to ask you, Cindy and I are going to have a conversation a little bit later on after you're off air with us. We're going to talk about practice routines, and you're going to be playing in a pro-am tomorrow, you said, so you're going to get a chance to see some of the amateurs, you know, warming up, getting ready. And obviously this is not a full practice routine, but you've obviously seen a lot of them over the years practice, and I'm sure your eyes have probably popped open and thought, I can't believe that they're doing this or they're spending so much time doing this. talk about the difference between, because there is a difference. There's a practice routine when you're maybe working with your coach or, you know, full bore, you're working on specific things, and then there's a warm-up, which is really what they should be doing tomorrow. Talk about the differences and what you see the mistakes that a lot of amateurs make when they're out of the range.
Yeah, I feel like I could talk a lot with you guys about this because there's definitely some importance to understanding what a warm-up is and practice is. I would start by saying that especially amateurs will go get a lesson and treat that as practice, and I am like the number one advocate of like that is not practice. That is just giving you the tools to go out and practice with. So it kind of goes along the lines of, like, if you're in a pro-am, don't get there 3 hours before your tee time and call that your practice to get ready for the day. I'm, like, picturing, I can't remember, like, the exact, like, scene, but I know, like, in the office, I remember Andy, like, had gone out, like, the night before and hit, like, thousands of golf balls, and he showed up with, like, he couldn't even swing the next day because his hands were, like, all blistered, and he was, like, trying to get ready for this golf round with his, with a client, which is hilarious because I feel like I kind of, like, relate to that. I'm like, yeah, I don't really think, like, getting here, like, 3 hours early was really the way to, like, play well in this pro-am, but there's definitely, like, let's say you go out for an hour, you know, 5 days before, and then an hour 2 days before, and then an hour then the day before. I feel like you're probably going to get a little bit more out of that than if you're just out there grinding for 3 hours straight. So I think, like, making the – and I understand people have jobs and schedules, life schedules, but probably that's part of the reason that they can't do it. But there's definitely, like, something to at least trying to space out your time and, okay, I'm going just for, even if it's 30 minutes or 45 minutes just to work on something in the evening, so that you're playing, like, more consistently instead of randomly all of a sudden you played for 3 hours and then you didn't pick up a club for another 3 months.
And Lindsay, let me just to clarify a little bit even further with this. You know, when you're involved in a warm-up, so you're getting ready to play tomorrow and you're going to hit the, you know, the practice area a little bit, not you personally, but your amateur partners, let's say, as an example, that's not the time to be working on specific drills or things like that or making adjustments. That's the time really just to get yourself ready for the upcoming round, which, you know, might be 30 minutes from now, or whatever the case may be. Touch a little bit about that, because that is what we see a lot. Is we'll see people getting ready to go out on the golf course and they're working on more technical things than just sort of loosening up and getting ready and working with whatever they have that day, correct?
And I think that it doesn't matter what level you're at with your game, that, like you said, the range session right before your round shouldn't necessarily be, okay, I'm trying to work on the thing my coach told me 3 weeks ago that I haven't really worked on. It should be, mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm just getting my body loose. I'm probably going to be hitting a few shots and saying, okay, like, especially we'll say more for the amateur golfer. You know, they can hit a bunch of shots and they can say, okay, yeah, I'm noticing that my ball is, I'm playing a fade today. So I need to keep that in mind so that when I'm on the course, I just need to play the fade. So I think that's where a lot of golfers could improve, is just, like, having that in mind, saying, okay, on the range, I was definitely hitting it right, where I think a lot of amateur golfers want to play, like, perfect golf too, which even a professional doesn't want to play perfect golf. So I think they're like, right. Oh, I'm hitting a fade on the, I want to hit it straight. I need to sit here and try to figure out how to hit it straight. And then they go out on the course and they're like, yeah, it's still fading. I don't know why it's fading. I need to hit it straight. Where I feel like they would probably benefit from just saying, okay, the ball's moving left to right today, so I need to play that. So now on hole one, I'm just going to aim left edge of the green and let it fade into the green and just play it, just work with it. And I do that when I'm as a professional too. So I think an amateur even more so should have that in mind. Like, okay, let's just play with what we're working with today. We're not trying to fix my swing, because fixing your swing on a golf course, some people can work that way. I don't understand it. I'm like, once you're out there, you just got to play it. You just got to play.
Yeah, I think a lot of them lack discipline. And they think that the harder they work at something right before they're about ready to go out on the golf course, like you said, trying to get it straight or try to, you know, get that drawback that they normally play with, and for some reason it's not working today, they're trying so hard and they start making adjustments out in the golf course. They're fiddling with their grip, or they're, you know, taking their swing in a different path because maybe they figure that's going to alleviate the problem. And the next thing you know, they've taken a very small problem and now made it a very big problem. And then that adds to the frustration level. And that's what I mean by not being very disciplined. They're not willing to work with what they've got. And then after the run, if they want to go and tinker and work on things and get things straight, I think that's okay. But during the round or even before the round, I think is a mistake. Cindy, go ahead.
I don't know if they have the right expectations. That's what I think it is. I think they believe that it's easy. They have no idea how hard it is to make it look so simple. Right?
Yeah, I think that's a great way to put it. It's definitely the expectation.
Anyway, what would you tell a young person, boy or girl, and their parent who is pushing the child to win lots of trophies and I guess expectation levels for them to play in lots of tournaments and maybe not work on their swing as much?
You guys are touching on a lot of things that I'm pretty passionate about, so I'm enjoying this conversation. Well, I mean, if they're saying, okay, my kid needs to play or needs to win all these golf tournaments and play a lot, especially when you're young and developing, I think it's just really important to practice is super important. I think that the golf world has definitely turned into how many tournaments can we play? How many tournaments can we win? And have this huge resume before we're 10 years old or something like that. It's just, it's insane to me. When, like you said, the most important is just getting out there and getting that foundation set. I mean, I guess I would just say that I think that in the long run, I don't think that maybe they are winning tournaments, but long term, I'm not sure that it's going to last if they're not really working on their game. So there's definitely an importance to balancing that with just time at home and practicing. And especially when you're young, they want to play in tournaments. Just to be able to get that, that's part of practice too, is learning how to play in a tournament. But in the long run, if they're wanting to play for a long time competitively, I think there's something to just staying at home and working on your game.
Let me ask you this. Do coaches, because I have heard this, and maybe it's, you know, Cindy, you're old and you're not up with the times. Someone said that you need to have an Instagram page for your golf. And this was a dad that we teach a young girl who's just starting to play. And I said, I'm not sure why a coach would care if you have an Instagram page. I think it's more important that you learn how to break 100, and the coach is probably not going to care what your swing looks like when you shoot 120 in your high school matches or 60 or 65. I think it's more important that you work on your game and not post all this stuff on your Instagram golf page. And my son, who's a good player, went to Augusta State. He's president of the New York State Golf Association, said, Mom, why don't you ask a couple college coaches, because you're kind of old and maybe that's not the case anymore. So because you were a college coach for a little bit, maybe you would tell me if I'm foolish.
Well, when I was coaching, one thing that I was kind of bummed about was, like I said, it was the COVID year. I was in the 2020-2021 season. So we actually couldn't recruit, which was crazy. So I do feel like I didn't really get to experience the recruiting side that much whenever I was coaching. But I was recruited, and I do understand the importance of social media today. And I should say, yeah, I graduated college in 2017, so I don't think social media was as much of an importance when I was getting recruited, let's say in like 2010, 2011. I mean, I think there's some value to it, although I don't know that a college coach is only going to look at your Instagram and go, wow, this swing was amazing. Let's give her a full scholarship. Like, I think it's probably just, let's say you're really proud of your swing or you have a good Instagram following or a good, if you just are able to put out a lot of content that's really good and, I don't know, insightful to what you're doing day to day. But yeah, at the end of the day, I mean, a coach can look at your swing and be like, wow, you have an amazing swing. But if you're shooting 100, I don't think that golf swing on Instagram is going to do much for you. So yeah, I mean, like I said, I feel like, okay, it might add a little value to what you already have, but the resume is definitely going to top all of that.
Well, and, you know, the numbers are going to top all of that, right?
Right. Yeah, exactly.
Okay.
Let me jump in here real quick because we have to wrap up. But I just want to add real quick to that. I think there can be a benefit, obviously, having a social media presence. I think one thing besides checking out the swing and seeing if it looks sound and that, it also can give perhaps a coach a little bit of an insight into what their priorities are, because again, what they're putting up on social media dictates kind of where their mindset is at. If, you know, if it's all about clicks and it's all about getting attention, how much are they really focusing? So, I mean, I think there can be a benefit to it if it's structured properly, but if it's just a matter of, you know, communicating with people and, you know, posting up all kinds of, you know, oddities and things like that, then it's really of no benefit to the coach. So I think it's a yes or no. I think it could be beneficial, but I don't think it's necessary. I mean, many golfers over the decades never had social media and, you know, have risen to the top of the game. So I agree on both sides. I think it's a benefit in some ways if it's controlled properly and if it's used for the right purpose. But if it's just simply to, you know, post a lot of videos for the sake of posting it to me, I don't see the long-term benefit. But Lindsay, I want to thank you for joining us. We got to unfortunately let you go. It's been a great conversation. We'd love to have you come back anytime, and just keep doing what you're doing and have fun.
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you so much for having me again. This was fun.
Thank you. Good luck this week. Have fun.
Thank you.
Yeah, good luck.
Thanks.
Good luck this
week.
Appreciate it. All right. Bye-bye. All right, that was our special guest from the Epson Tour, Lindsay McCurdy, playing in Utah this week. We're going to take a quick message break from our sponsor, Victory Gear, and we'll be right back.
When it comes to golf, there are two topics that consistently come up, more distance and more energy. But hey, what if you could achieve both? Introducing Victory's carbon fiber insoles, the revolutionary performance insoles designed specifically to help golfers hit longer. Using patented carbon fiber technology, VKs do more than support your feet. Many golfers see a 1 to 2 mile per hour increase in club head speed just by adding Victory insoles to their shoes. So if you want to up your game and feel better after a long day on the course, choose Victory's carbon fiber insoles. Visit victory.com, that's VKTRY.com, and use code GT20 for 20% off today. This offer is exclusive for listeners of this podcast. Again, visit victory.com and use code GT20 for 20% off. Order today to start feeling the difference on your next round.
All right, welcome back. You're with Ted and Cindy on the Women of Golf Show, and we're just finished talking with our special guest this morning, Lindsay McCurdy from the Epson Tour, and now we're going to get into a discussion entitled Mastering Your Golf Practice Routine. And this is actually one of a number of books that over the years I've been putting together piece by piece, and they're just about ready to be released. And I thought I would share little snippets here and there in our discussions of some of the things that I thought were important to talk about, and I thought would make for an interesting discussion this morning. So, Cindy, practice, we talked a little bit about this with Lindsay, and there's really three types of golf practice. They're structured, unstructured, and competitive practice. And I thought we could talk, and there's other topics we're going to cover here in a moment, but I thought we would talk about that. So for people so that they understand, structured practice, of course, is characterized by its organized and goal-oriented nature. So it involves a planned approach to work on specific aspects of the game with clear objectives and a systematic method of achieving them. So this is more let's stay focused. Let's decide, okay, this is what I want to work on. And this is what we were talking about with Lindsay, you know, sort of the difference of a more regimented practice as opposed to a warm-up. So, Cindy, you're working with a lot of different players that obviously at different levels. There are certain times when you want their practice to be more structured as opposed to unstructured, correct? And maybe you can just give us an example.
Well, I think if you're doing a structured practice, you might do a lot of drills and work on one piece of your swing over a period of time. Like staying back and not coming over the top. You might do a couple of drills and do that, you know, for a longer period of time and just work on one piece of your swing.
Fantastic. That's actually perfect. And the benefits of a structured practice are numerous. It allows you to break down complex movements into manageable parts and focus on correcting weaknesses and obviously reinforce the strength. So being more structured in your practice, and that's where, you know, Lindsay talked about, you know, maybe, a week out before an event, you come out and work for an hour, and then maybe a couple of days before you do that. That is maybe going to be a more structured practice there. You're going to focus on areas that you're struggling with, and obviously you want to be able to see results, so you're going to work with specific objectives. And you want to, as you pointed out, Cindy, you know, maybe have some specific drills that your coach has given you or instructor, and obviously you want to provide them with feedback as well if you're working on your own. So if you've worked with them in a lesson and now you're, you know, doing some practice on your own, you want to report back to them, whether it be in an email or maybe a video that you've taken, so they can see and get some of the feedback themselves from what you've been working on. So I think it's very structured. It's important and it's going to be beneficial and give you some great feedback. Unstructured obviously is sort of the opposite. It's where it's more of a free form and spontaneous. It might involve playing rounds of golf without a specific focus or on technique or performance. So this is where I would classify this as more of almost like a, not a warm-up, but just I'm not really dialing in on anything specific. I just want to get out there and just sort of get myself loose and feel. What are your thoughts on that? And obviously I'm sure you have some of your players where they're going to do a more unstructured practice session as well. What are your thoughts?
Again, you know, you're just hitting balls on the range and probably starting, you know, with a short club and working your way up to a longer club on the driving range. In the putting green, you might be working on distance control or, you know, three-footers or, you know, how to read the greens, practicing 10-footers and trying to get a close, not three-putting. On the course, you might be trying to do, you know, playing smart golf and trying to avoid. I told the girls I was doing an American Express clinic yesterday in New York City and saying, okay, we're going to avoid stupid, so let's walk up to the tee box and, you know, there's a bunker on the right. We're going to aim over to the left. We're going to avoid the bunker at all costs. So instead of saying don't hit it in the bunker, we're going to aim to the left. So you see where stupid would go and you say, I'm going left rather than don't hit it in the bunker, you idiot, saying I'm hitting it to the left. So on the course, you would say, this is where I'm going. Instead of don't go here, you're always saying a positive. So on the course, you would say, oh, I'm going to find a new way to play this hole that I always screw up. So that's how you would do that.
Yep. Well said. And then the last one is competitive practice, and this is maybe involves simulating course conditions and pressures of tournament play. So if you're somebody that is maybe a junior and you're in tournaments and things like that, and you want to practice sort of real-life situations, that's something you can actually do on the range as well. You can visualize what maybe that first hole is going to be like. So you step up with your tee shot and say, okay, imagine maybe it's a left-to-right dog leg, so I want to imagine myself fading it around the corner, you know, whatever the scenario is. And you might even want to engage, if you're there with a friend or another peer, you might even want to engage into some healthy competition between the two. So, again, you're visualizing, mimicking some of the challenges and situations that you might encounter during competition. So I think this is beneficial as well, right?
Sure, sure. Again, you know, what are you doing on the practice range, right? And are you trying to hit it at different targets? Are you practicing, you know, how far do we hit the club? If you're just standing on the range and you're raking and hitting, you're not paying attention to what you're doing. And most people don't know how far they hit the ball with certain clubs. So if you're going to set practice goals, maybe you should laser, you know, or find out how far are the targets on the range and then try to hit the shots to the targets to see how far your ball is going and mark that yardage down so that you know how far you hit it. So when you play, you can figure out how far am I from the hole and then hit the right club for the right shot. Again, yesterday I had this woman say, well, I can hit my 7-iron in the air. I said, well, you don't know how far you hit your 7-iron, and this is 160 yards, so hitting your 7-iron, you're going to have to hit your 7-iron two or three times to get there. So let's hit your driver,
wow.
You know. Again, and it depends on the skill level as well. So
right.
There's so many different
right.
things, what if, and, you know, depending on the skill level of the player. So everything, it depends on the skill level.
Right, exactly. And the next one is, and this one we'll just sort of gloss over a little bit because I think it's pretty self-explanatory, and that's the practice environment. So there's really, you know, three opportunities here, the driving range, what we've talked about, the putting green, and obviously the golf course. So the driving range, of course, as we talked about, you want to, again, probably have some structured practice there where you're not just raking and hitting balls, as you pointed out, Cindy, but maybe visualize some course conditions or have specific targets. And this is where you want to work on distance control, finding out, okay, exactly how far you're hitting each club so that when you do get out on the golf course and play in a round, you're going to have a good idea of the distances you're hitting with each club. So then you'll make good selection from that point. The putting green, obviously, helps and refine someone's short game, particularly the putting stroke, of course. So gives you an idea of the slope and the speeds of the various greens that you might be faced with out there. And obviously gives you an opportunity to practice a wide range of putts, obviously some chipping and things like that. Pitching is a little bit different. Some courses have a little bit more restriction on that because of other, you know, players there and that, so you have to be careful. But usually there is an area that you can do all three. And then, of course, the golf course is an invaluable practice environment because as golf instructors, we like to take our students out on the golf course and actually have a practice session. So there's a great opportunity there. That's sort of the environment as you want to warm up or practice as a player. And I think that you need to make use of all of those. I think if you want to become a better player, you need to just, as you pointed out, not just sort of go out there and hit balls. You need to actually practice with a purpose. And the reason I wanted to skip past that is I think it's pretty self-explanatory, but I just wanted to raise a couple of points. The next one is effectiveness habits. And you already sort of alluded to one. The first one is setting practice goals. So, again, Cindy, this is something that I think is important for players to do is setting actual practice goals so you're not just going out there and hitting balls. So maybe give us an example of what maybe a goal for one of your students might be.
Well, and that's kind of what I was alluding to when we spoke to Lindsay. I believe that some of the people that play – don't set practice goals. And if you don't know what you're doing when you're standing over a shot, you can't expect to hit the ball correctly. So when you play, you get depressed because you don't hit the ball where you want it to go, but you don't know what you're doing when you're standing over the ball because you don't set practice goals. And then when you go play, you don't shoot the score you want to shoot because you can't hit the ball where you want it to go. Well, so that goes back to setting practice goals. So do I know what I'm doing when I'm standing over the ball? And if you don't, then let's back up and go take a lesson and figure out what am I doing when I'm standing over the ball and know what I'm doing when I'm swinging. And if you know what you're doing when you're swinging, then you're going to hit the ball where you want it to go. Then you can take that out on the golf course and know how far you hit the ball, figure out what the yardage is, then you can produce a shot, then you get happy, then you hit the ball where you want it to go, then you score better. So it's all, again, it goes back to, can I hit the ball where I want it to go? And you have to be able to maintain focus and evaluate your performance. So many of these people that play, kids, parents, again, some of these kids break 70 because they work on their game more diligently and break par because they know what they're doing. And if you know what you're doing, then when you get in a tournament, you don't go, shoot doubles and triples. You have to first know yourself, know what you're doing, understand where the ball is going to go, and be in control of yourself, and then you can control the club, and then you can tell the ball where to go, and then you can shoot better scores. But if you don't do that, then it's a free-for-all, and then it's look out, baby, you're going to shoot 1,000, and then you're going to be miserable, and nobody wants to
right,
do that.
Exactly. Right. And that adds to the frustration for a lot of players is, again, there's a lack of, and you touched on these briefly, but a lack of focus, and maintaining focus during a practice session is another good one because, this is where you're setting up the building blocks for effective play. For instance, developing a good practice routine, breaking your sessions into manageable time blocks. So instead of just going out there, okay, I'm going to go to the range for an hour and just beat balls, you want to break that hour down into, and the reason why you want to break them down into manageable time blocks is if you're just out there for an hour just hitting balls, after a certain period of time, because there's no real focus or there's no real sort of regiment to what you're doing, it becomes very boring and you lose focus and you lose, you're not encouraged anymore. It's just, well, I'm hitting balls and okay, I'm hitting some good ones, hitting some bad ones. There's no really method to your madness. There's no structured practice. And if you do it in such a way and make the areas that you're really struggling with, put them in the forefront. So if your short game is really struggling, then a bigger block might be working on key elements of your short game that you're struggling. Maybe your chipping is not good. Maybe your putting's bad. So break that hour up into manageable blocks that work and isolate specific areas that you're struggling with. And maybe even you use some mental cues to stay engaged. Also, this is a great opportunity to work on building a pre-shot routine, getting that sound, getting that dialed in the correct way that works for you, and that's effective. Because, again, how many times do we see players going out in a pro-am event or tournament that have absolutely no pre-shot routine? One minute they're waggling and taking a couple of practice swings. The next time they're not doing anything, they're stepping up to the ball. So this is the time on the practice sessions when you want to do that. And by maintaining focus is going to help you engage better when you get out on the golf course. And then the last point that you made was evaluating your practice performance. I mean, there's no point in going out there if you're not now going to take a look back and say, okay, how effective was I in this area here? What was my result? Did I get the desired results that I had when I went out there? And that's crucial. I mean, that's something obviously as a coach, when you're working with your students and you're able to do that on the fly. But for students, a lot of them don't evaluate their own performance unless they're prodded to do so, correct?
Yeah, but you know what? I have to back up and just tell you a little story about yesterday. So I had 6 wonderful businesswomen from American Express, and I got there early, and the first woman that showed up said to me, I now have time to play more than a couple times a year because her daughters are off to college. And she said, my husband gives me grief that I don't practice enough. And I go to the range and I practice and I can't get the ball in the air. And he tells me that I need to keep my head down and my arm straight and da-da-da-da-da-da-da. Well, I happen to be writing a book, Ted, about the committee of they. And they tell you everything that you're doing wrong. And so her husband is part of her committee. And we went out and we started on the driving range and we spent the rest of the day on the golf course. And at the end of the day, she came up to me and she said, I want you to know that I had the best day of my life. And my daughter just called me and asked me, how did today go? And she said, I had the best teacher in the world. And she started to tear up and she said, I've never had so much fun and I've never hit the ball in the air so much in my life. And she said, you actually said to me, I'm so glad you came. And I said, that's what I'm here for. And I want you to know that if the club goes down, the ball goes up. Never look at the top of the ball again. You must make the club get under the ball. And she gave me this huge hug, and she said, forgive me for tearing up, but you've changed my life. So our listeners need to know this is called the Women of Golf, and some of these women have to play business golf, and there are real big deals. Like this woman's in charge of compliance for all of American Express, and she has to play in big company games, and she does not want to look like an idiot. So if you take lessons and you don't get any better, feel free to email me at cindy@cindymillergolf.com because I can help you even if it's over the phone. And again, I just sometimes you go out there and practice your little butt off and you don't get any better. So, and that should not happen. So if you're not getting better, you need to reach out to somebody else because this woman absolutely, it changed her life. And if people keep telling you everything you're doing wrong, that shouldn't happen. You have to be shown how to do it right. There you go.
That's a great example. And I'm sure she won't be listening to her husband when she goes home if she's smart. You know, I've said this many, many times, you know, over the years. And again, you know, bless their heart. I know that they're, in some cases, it's probably well-intended. But the truth of the matter is, you know, for a lot of men out there that finally have broken through the ice to get their partner to finally come out and play. Maybe their spouse or partner has never played before and says, you know what? Yeah, maybe I'm going to take it up in that. I don't even care if you're a golf professional. Do not try to teach your partner because the truth of the matter is they will resent it. In most cases, not every case, there are a few exceptions. You need to connect them, let them find the person that fits well with them. And just stay out of it. Just go enjoy the rounds when you play together. Don't try to micromanage. Don't try to coach them. Let the coach do that. That's what they're there for. And it would probably save a lot of frustration out on the golf course, particularly for women, because there are already many women, as you know, Cindy, that are newer to the game, are very, very apprehensive. They're very nervous. They don't want to look foolish. They want to, so, and of course, they're going to listen to their partner because they trust them and that. But the truth of the matter is there's a lot of guys that struggle with their golf game, and they're trying to teach their wives how to play, which makes no sense whatsoever. So you're exactly right. And I'm glad that's a great story to share. And for any of the women listening out there, you know, you want to go out. The main thing is you want to go out and have fun. And you want to get yourself in a position that you're working with somebody that is going to not just tell you what you're doing wrong, because obviously you need to have point some things out, but obviously get out there and show you what you're doing right and get you on a better plan. But yeah, quit listening to your husband or your partner. Get out there and work with somebody. The last one we're going to touch on real quick here is common practice mistakes. Practicing without a plan is right front and center. This is one of the most common practice mistakes is, as we've touched on, is practicing without a clear plan. We see this all the time, right?
Absolutely. Absolutely. You need to know what you want to work on. Again, you know, I used to do mix with a big company on the Epson tour all the time. And when I introduced all the players to everyone, I would say, you know, tell me who you are, where you went to college, how long you've been playing, and what are you working on? Everybody's working on something, and you need to know what you're working on.
Yep, exactly. And Lindsay mentioned this next one, the second point here in her discussion earlier with us, and that is over practicing. She gave the example of somebody coming out spending 3 hours and was so, you know, fatigued mentally and physically the next day when they were getting ready to play that they couldn't swing the club. So the over practicing is a big no-no as well, right? I mean you can beat balls,
absolutely,
you know, noted, for 5 hours a day, but then you can't play in the tournament. What's that?
I'm laughing because I'm a lunatic. That would be me.
Yeah. We've all done it. I mean, we've all done it. We, you know, especially if we've got an event coming up that we're, you know, maybe it's a corporate event or whatever the case is. In your case, it was, you know, tournaments on the LPGA. But, you know, you get into it. You don't want to, you know, look foolish. You want to get out there and be playing well. But, you know, there is such a thing as over practicing. So, you know, you have to have a plan. And, you know, you need to have, there's a time when it needs to be structured, and you need to obviously, you know, maintain focus on what you're doing, but you need to do it in such a way that it's balanced. You know, if you don't have balance in whatever it is you do, it's not going to be effective, and you're just going to end up going through the motions. And the final one that I want for us very quickly to touch on is ignoring weak areas. It can be tempting for golfers to focus on the parts of their games that they enjoy or excel at. You know, how many times we see guys out there on the practice tee just banging out drivers because they love to see how far it goes and they want to get that extra distance. And then they neglect the weaker areas of their game because it's not as fun or it's not as interesting. And that's why, you know, when I said earlier about and having, you know, putting together sort of the building blocks and working on areas of your game. This is a common one that we see, right, Cindy? I mean, how many times have you been out there and you just see people raking and hitting balls, and, yeah, it looks pretty seeing that ball flight going out there, but then they get out on the golf course and they're stubbing chips along the way, or they can't get out of the bunker, or their putts, you know, three putting every green. They're ignoring their weak areas, right?
Absolutely, absolutely. You need to be able to be willing to look in the mirror, you know, and sometimes it's hard, but do not avoid the mirror.
No. And I think a good one is to quit, is to tune out the committee of they. I'm interested to hear, to read this book that you're working on, because I think it's going to be a good one, because, there is a lot of people that love to, I hear it all the time out in the range. You hear people chatting, and, oh, you should do this, Bob, or maybe you should do that. And I watch the guy that just gave the advice, and he's topping one, and you know, a big old slice or something like that. Bob, maybe you need to move a few spots down the range because you're getting some bad advice. And then I think to myself, well, they've probably got a little money on the game that they're getting ready to play. And you know, Frank over here is trying to mess up Bob's golf game by giving him some bad advice. You know, that always kind of goes through my mind, is I wonder if there's really an ulterior motive behind that. But, you know, the main thing, all kidding aside, is you really need to develop a sound practice routine, whether it's an hour a week, 2 hours a week, whatever the case is. You need to, if you want to become a better player, you do have to practice. But you have to structure it in such a way. Yes, of course you do. Yeah, right. You've got to practice. I mean, a lot of players don't. And you know, how many times, Cindy, have you had players come up to you and say, well, I'm playing an event in, you know, in a week or two, and I haven't played in 3 months. Can you get me into shape? Well, what are you going to do with that? Right?
Yeah. You're still right.
And then they don't. And I mean, I know it sounds like a broken record that we keep having to keep saying this, and hopefully one year, you know, it'll sink in with people. But the truth of the matter is, folks, you know, for you tuning into the show, you have to develop a practice routine. Whether you're striving to be a top-level player on a tour, or whether you just want to have fun with your spouse or partner or your friends or your coworkers, you've got to put effort. If you have a job, you have to put a certain amount of effort in to do your job well. So it works the same thing on the golf course. Whatever you put into it is what you're going to get out of it. But it has to be smart. And if you're not somebody that's proficient, then you need to go to somebody like Cindy, like myself, like many of the other professionals out there that can help you with your game and get you on a good plan and good track. Because you can go to the range 1,000 times, but if you're not practicing with a purpose and you don't have a game plan put together to practice the areas that need to be worked on, you're not going to improve. You're just beating balls for nothing. You're just wasting time and money. So get a plan, get together with somebody that can help you put that plan together, and go out and have some more fun. Great discussion, Cindy. I think it was a great show. I enjoyed Lindsay earlier on. She's got some very good insight into her game, and it was a pleasure having her on. And I think that she's going to go far. And if she decides one day that she's tired of battling it out on tour, I think she'll have a very good job as a golf college coach. I think she'll do very well.
Yeah.
All right. On that note, we want to thank everybody for tuning in. Yeah, you too. Bye-bye, everybody.
Thank you for joining us. We hope you enjoyed listening to this week's Women of Golf show. Ted and Cindy wish to thank this week's special guests. Remember to join them every Tuesday from 9 to 10 a.m. Eastern here on the iGolf Sports Network or on any of these social media platforms, iTunes, Stitcher, TuneIn, CastBox, TalkStream Live, and of course Spotify. To get updates on the show, you can follow the Women of Golf Facebook page at www.facebook.com/womenofgolf. This has been a production of the iGolf Sports Network.